Thank you very much. And as you can tell from the title of my talk, A Landscape Genetics Approach to Hessian Fly Distributions, this talk's going to be a little different than the other ones that we've heard this morning. Hessian fly is an important pest to wheat, and it can be found in almost all wheat-growing regions throughout the world and can cause severe damage to wheat. In our lab, we've already established a Hessian fly structure from the populations using 14 microsatellite loci from these 12 collections of Hessian fly. Their locations are indicated by the little yellow tab. So I'm just going to go ahead and skip to the summary of our structure results. Structure gives us two distinct regions here in east and a west division, and then after that, Mississippi or Louisiana falls out separate on its own into its own population, and then we get a grouping between the Georgia population and the South Carolina population, and then after that, the two Texas populations that we have here and our Alabama population and our Florida population are grouped together. And the labels on these populations, I forgot to mention, are the first two letters of the county name followed by the state abbreviation. Another way to visualize this is to interpolate the genetic landscape shape, and what this does is kind of allow you to view your genetic relations across your landscape. And what I want you to take from this slide in particular is that all three of the green arrows indicate the same points. So this is all done in alleles in space, and it takes it gets its information from these points, and these points directly correlate to the locations on the map. And so here are a couple angles of our three-dimensional genetic landscape interpolation. And as you can see, here on the west side you get some high points, and on the east side you get some low points. And you automatically see that there is the same division between east and west. And really that got me thinking. So we started initially thinking Hessian fly populations are isolated, not just isolated genetically, but also isolated geographically. And isolated by distance. However, a lot of our initial results indicated this was not the case. So in order to know what's going on in these populations, why is there this division, and what's really driving the structure in Hessian fly. So I started thinking about minimum annual temperature, which is also the same as hardiness zones. I also started thinking about the amount of wheat planted and the purpose of the wheat planted, whether it's for pasture or strictly for grain. So if you're familiar at all with the Hessian fly, you're probably familiar with the cultural control practice known as fly-free dates. And this is delaying the planting date to hopefully escape some of the adult Hessian flies, and thus rescue your field from Hessian fly infestation. But as you can see here below the red line, a lot of the southern collections that we have, fly-free dates really don't pertain to them. It's just too warm most of the year for it to really be an effective control strategy. However, I started thinking about planting date and planting date differences, and I was curious as to if there was any planting date differences. And so I started going through some extension handouts and seeing if extension agents were telling their growers to plant at different times, different areas, and if that had something to do with it. And I actually came across one from Texas, and it said if you're planning to as a forage for your cattle, you know, don't worry about planting date. Go ahead and plant early and get your cattle out there. But if you're planning just for grain, you might want to hold back and try to escape some of those adult Hessian flies. And I started thinking, well, in Texas, that's a big cattle industry down there, and maybe not so much in the east. So that led me to think about this as possibly what's happening. So here in the east, perhaps these growers over here are planting late, strictly for grain, while those over here in the west are planting a little earlier so they can get some of their cattle out on there. To begin foraging on the wheat. But I wanted to test this a little bit more specifically, and for that I turned to GIS. And some of the GIS variables that I'm specifically interested in testing are distance, minimum annual temperature, which is the same as hardiness zones like I mentioned before, the acres of wheat harvested for grain, the average number of cattle per 100 acres, and then also the total number of cattle, and this is all per county. And this was all for, all of our GIS analysis was performed in the program ZT. And the way we evaluate these variables is through the use of Mantell tests. And Mantell tests are like it's a way to see if there's a correlation between matrices. It's a lot like a regular correlation between variables. between variables, but you use matrices instead. And so we found a correlation between our genetic distance and then the geographic or our GIS variables here. And I'll explain this chart a little bit more. We have our R value along the y-axis, and then our GIS variables along the x-axis. And the two colors here, the FST and RST, are ways of measuring the genetic distance. And FST and RST are very similar, except RST is more specific to microsatellites because it takes into account the stepwise mutational model. And as you can see at the 0.1 level, we do get some significance in a couple of these, specifically distance. We had a low RE value, but still significant. Temperature kind of fell out. The total cattle within the county, we had a really high R value and significance. Average cattle per 100 acres, not quite as good as total cattle, and then a little bit with wheat, low R value, but you know, little significance. So in order to evaluate this a little further, what we also did is partial Mantell tests, and partial Mantell tests are very similar to simple Mantell tests by comparing two matrices again, but then you control for the effects of a third matrix. So this table is a lot like the one previously as far as R on the Y and our distance variables on the X. This significance is at a 0.05 level though. And you can see this distance alone, this is the same as in the simple Mantell test. You still you get a reasonable R value for this and significance with the FST. When you control for minimum temperature here, that doesn't change the story much. It's still about the same as distance alone. I'm going to go ahead and skip this one just for a second. I'll come right back to it. Mean cattle, when you control for mean cattle, still doesn't change the story. And the same with wheat, you actually get a little bit lower R values, but it doesn't change too much. As for when you control for the total cattle in a county, comparing geographic distance and genetic distance, you get this huge negative R value, which is significant. And the way you can kind of look at this is kind of like kicking the leg out from under a chair. You know, it's just going to come crashing down. This is really similar to what happens. So when you take away the total cattle, distance really doesn't hold up as a good variable to explain this genetic structure. So we also wanted to look at wheat a little bit more too. So this wheat, these graphs here are the same as in the simple Mantell tests, and this figure is similar to all the other ones. However, when you look at wheat and you control for distance, what you get here is you actually get a lower R value, and still at the 0.05 level, there's still no significance. So really, the total wheat harvested per county really doesn't give us a good idea of what's driving the genetic structure here. When we looked at cattle, total cattle per county, you see here just in the simple, as it was shown in the simple Mantell test, the high R value, which is significant. Then when you control for distance, you take distance out as a factor, you actually improve your R value just a little bit, and it becomes extremely significant. So really what this is kind of indicating is that there's some sort of correlation here between our cattle variable and our genetic distance, really indicating that there's really connection here, and possibly due to planting day. So in conclusion, there is some regional gene flow and genetic structure, and distance alone does not necessarily explain all the variables that we're seeing in these, or all the variation that we're seeing in our populations. And the intent of the wheat use is in a region may influence Hessian fly gene flow. And what this really goes to is it has an impact on the farmer. Say you're planting your farm, or you're planting your wheat for grain, and your neighbor over here is planting it for cattle, and he's planting early and for his cattle get out there. Well, he may really be impacting your Hessian fly infestation by promoting or harboring Hessian fly and really reducing your yields. So with that, I'd like to thank people who have helped me out at Purdue and Purdue University and USDARS, some of my fellow Hessian fly people and grad students, and then especially my wife and two daughters back home. With that, I'd like to take any questions.
Questions?
Yes, sir.
Could you say something about how you were measuring genetic distance on the original map? What were you using?
Yes, sir. The question was, how was I measuring the genetic distance on the original map? And what that is a summary of the results of a structure plot. Structure is a a clustering algorithm, a Bayesian clustering algorithm, to use you with the microsatellite loci. So what it does is it takes each population and it takes each individual in the population, and using a Bayesian method, it determines if that population is the correct fit or if it belongs in another population. And it can actually group them in a stepwise increment, that you select, such as a grouping of 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, so on and so forth. And of course, I selected a grouping of 2 through 14 to evaluate that evolution of grouping.
The number of microsatellites that you used to generate that?
14. The question was the number of microsatellites. That was 14 microsatellites. Great. Thank you very much.